Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello and welcome to Keep On Cybertrucking, a podcast where Cybertruck owners share their experiences, talk about all things EVs and technology, and apparently cryptocurrency. So,
let's get back to it. So Dogecoin is like it used to be a joke. It's literally a meme, and that's the whole point of it. Yeah. Was that it was made as a joke. I've got the YouTube one going, and it's in my ear. Sorry. So Dogecoin was made as a joke initially. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even have active developers. It was literally just shitcoin that nobody cared about until Elon came along and was like, yo, I'm gonna pump this one. Mm-hmm. And now I think that if you would travel back 10 years and told somebody that Dogecoin would be worth what, like 30 cents now, they would like their heads would explode, but then they would also drastically change the future because everybody would load up on Dogecoin. Because then it was like fractional. It was like 0.00, mm-hmm. zeros, like 7 zeros or 8 zeros was its value.
Yeah,
it's crazy. 100%. Yeah, because I know back at the last big pump with crypto, we would have been 2021. Like it was just insane. Like even my brother had bought it like at 7 cents, and then it went from that to like 60 or something. It was just insane, and then it came crashing back down. But now it's climbing back up, obviously, because of the whole Department of Government Efficiency thing. But you were talking about the two ways to buy it. I think you might have been hearing about a SHIB, like Shibu Inu, the type of dog that Doge is, but people like try to make like a sub meme coin to follow along with Doge, and it was even further like in the zeros. So it was like 5 zeros, and then you start the number. Like that's how fractional it was.
I have no idea. All I know is that a friend of mine came up to me today and was like, "Hey, I need some advice on Doge," and I'm like, mm-hmm. "I don't think I'm the guy to ask," but okay,
yeah.
And then he started talking about. Like he was saying he owns some Doge and it's like mm-hmm. at 40 cents. He goes, but if I would have had it in something else, it'd be $6 or something. And he was all pissed off.
Oh, yeah.
And I go, I don't know, man. I'm not that guy for you. But I do see that it's shooting up. And before the show, giving everybody a little, because we just kind of jumped into this. We were talking before we started the show about Doge and Bitcoin. And Bitcoin's now, I think, over $90,000.
Yeah,
each one. I feel bad for that guy that bought pizza with his Bitcoin.
every day, I'm sure he's like, you know, if I only had it now. But I mean, the problem is with it. It's like that story always ignores the fact that it's like, dude, you would have been watching it slowly climb. Like I remember when mm-hmm. it was groundbreaking when it broke like $100. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember when it was and Litecoin and like 8 other coins were the only ones out there. I mean, he would have sold it so much sooner. Mm-hmm. But like, there's no possible way it could keep going, and then it does.
Yeah,
100%. This is what I told my friend today. I had Bitcoin when I think I bought it when it was like 7,000 or something mm-hmm. like that, 6,000. And then when I got to like 15, I was like, I doubled my money. I'm good. I'm selling mm-hmm. it. And I sold it. And
yeah. And I mean, I've talked about and posted about cryptocurrency on social media for a while. It's like I've always said, treat it like worse than options trading. Like you need to treat as if it is just straight up gambling, because it is literally there's nothing backing mm-hmm. any of it. In fact, gambling is probably more efficient and safe compared to crypto, because at least if you win, someone has to pay you. This is, you know, for a long mm-hmm. time, liquidation of your holdings. If you had a, you know, one of your coins just absolutely busted and jumped and you could buy a Porsche with it or something like that, you know, that, yeah. Anyway, an exit strategy is usually mm-hmm. ideal. So
no, you're 100% right. So my same buddy in the conversation today, I told him, I said, I treat crypto like I treat me going to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, because there's sometimes where I go to Vegas and it's I'm either there for business or I'm there because my son's playing basketball tournament or there's some reason why I'm there. I'm not there to gamble. But there's times where I go and I'm like, hey, I'm coming. We're going to, you know, we're going to drink. We're going to eat good food and we're going to go gamble, you know?
Exactly. Let's lose some money. That's exactly the mindset. You got to go in with it being like, this is gone. This is my entertainment for tonight. This is the money that I'm paying for it. You know, if I come home with some of it, that's cool. But, you know, no one's getting rich tonight.
I remember, I mean, because it was back in 2017 where we really saw like that first time it went up to like 17,000 with Bitcoin. And then that's when we saw the peak is also in Chicago in the Mercantile Exchange, or basically where they have the options trading market. They opened up options to short Bitcoin, which was a completely new thing. And then it tanked and we didn't see it come really back until like 2021. But that's also... I think it was it Christmas? Yeah, it was Christmas of 2020 that it was like hovering around 10,000 again. My brother had like got me and my other brother like some Bitcoin just as like a Christmas present. But it was like, you know, like $100 or so and nothing crazy. And then he bought it in like October, and then that's when it started going crazy. So like by the time Christmas hit, it was already over 30, almost 40,000. And he was like, okay, guys, I have a story. Like I bought this when it was 10,000. This is not normal. This is crazy. It was 2020. What year was this?
It was 2020. Okay. Yeah. That's funny because I have a similar, it was actually, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. If you by that, you mean December 2019 leading into 2020?
This was
or Christmas in fall. 2020.
Christmas of 2020. So it was fall of 2020. Yeah.
It's funny because 2019, actually that Christmas, I had like one of the best runs of so many of my coins and everything like that. And then stupid me was doing the whole, hey, hold, let's see, blah, you know, and then just all of it just gets, you know, redistributed to the Winklevoss twins. So my hope is that every time there's a huge catastrophic thing that impacts crypto, it usually like absolutely crushes the price. But then it pumps back up again within 2 years. Like I'm old enough to remember the Magic the Gathering online exchange, Mount Geox, which was like the first major instance where somebody just kind of took all the money and walked away, and nobody and like a number of people got sued over it and everything. That whole thing happened, killed the price of Bitcoin, and then it bounced back up again. Mm-hmm. And then recently you have freaking what was that big one that just like absolutely ate shit, and Sam Bankman-Fried, that kid, you know, went to federal prison for the next 9 million years.
FTX.
FTX. I mean, what another instance of just being like, we allow people to print money. Guess what? Don't be surprised when they print money. And
don't
now,
be surprised when they print bullshit.
And I'm like, that affected, that was close to $1 trillion, I think, that there was like the value lost. No, maybe not that high. Maybe it was like 900 million or it was up there, wasn't it? Was it in the billions? I really think it was in the billions. If I'm not,
because there was there was even celebrities that were pumping it too, and they didn't. Yeah. They had no idea that it was.
And there were people who were spokespeople for FTX and taking, I think, the coin that they were issuing like as payment or whatever. So it just kind of fed into it. Yeah. It's crazy. and then that thing affected everybody, and here we are 3 years later, and we're seeing Bitcoin beyond the all time highs pre FTX. Like,
It's
not going away, folks. That's all I'm saying.
It is not going away. And the interesting thing is that once we hit max supply of Bitcoin, that's when like the price is going to settle out. And just for context, there's only 21 million Bitcoins available, and we're almost at 20 million now.
Mm-hmm.
We're at 19.78 million Bitcoins. So like once all the Bitcoins are mined, now granted, like as we get closer and closer to that like margin, it's going to get harder and harder. So it'll take a while, but it's still like once it gets up there, I would assume that Bitcoin would be around like 100,000, and that's going to be what its value is now, like going forward.
That's just crazy. My same buddy, when I was talking to him, he goes, dude, you want to hear something crazy? He goes, I bought 15 Bitcoin when it was like $80. And I'm like, and what happened? I'm all, you'd be a millionaire right now. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I know. Mm-hmm. I sold it. Well, the
friction, the idea, the notion that a cryptocurrency, that this kind of egalitized currency would be permitted, let alone have a run like it has. I mean, you know, it's obvious it just isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's crazy. Like, to put it in percentage, since it started in 2010, it's now up 145 million%.
Yeah.
Give or take.
That's wild.
All time.
And anybody that tells you that you're going to get those returns, you would jump on it. Like, no business. So
that's where we know time travel is real. If like some guy just went back and just bought a bunch of them. And
heck yeah.
Owns the world.
That'd be the first thing I go
to. Or he's the one who's orchestrating all of the disasters to make sure that, you know, he can buy in cheap and win in history.
That's one way to do it.
Those deep boys.
Speaking of disasters, I don't know if you want to jump into stuff.
Speaking of disasters, don't say that.
So I think we spoke this into existence.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Because last week we were talking about the recall, but we had a special guest on.
Tesla, we would appreciate sponsorship. We would be more than happy to discuss that with you. Please contact Eric.
Yeah. So, I'm readily available. Nobody's contacting me. So.
He's happy to negotiate.
Tesla has officially recalled. But they're only recalling 2,431 Cybertrucks, which
suspicious
is very interesting. They've said that they figured out, or they think they figured out, exactly how to distinguish which inverters are going bad. I want to see if I could find that real quick. So they're figuring that there's only, here it is. In October, Tesla said that it finally identified a specific population of Cybertrucks with a higher drive inverter failure rate due to MOSFET.
Those things are amazing. Those things are so badass.
So it's stating that based off of that information, they've kind of narrowed it down to the 2,431 Cybertrucks that they're officially recalling. Obviously, I'm not in contact with everybody that owns a Cybertruck, but almost, and I mean almost, like 98% of every Cybertruck owner that I know has had this issue happen to them.
Mm.
I don't know a lot of them, but I mean, I know a good amount. And so it's just one of those things where I don't know if 131 is actually going to cut it. I hope that's all it is. I hope that's because that's probably somewhere around 5% of all the Cybertrucks manufactured at this point.
Keep in mind, so there's some language in here that might be telling. So you've got, in October, Tesla said they identified it, but they said it decided to issue the voluntary recall.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for it. And I think that maybe this is just the beginning of kind of a wave of these, you know, where it's like, oh, we've identified another set that had the same MOSFET or a similar one that fails. We can now safely voluntarily recall those. Like, I mean, it's honestly, as far as I'm aware of it, that's good risk management. That's them being like, we can fix the ones that we know need fixing. It's 2,000 of
them. Makes sense.
So let's get them in and fix it.
They're being proactive and they're saying, hey, bring yours in because we know yours is probably going to fail. Bring yours in. We'll fix it. We'll get it addressed. And let's see what happens after this.
Yep.
Hey.
And then so right here it also states that beginning on or shortly after December 9th, 2024, at no charge to the customer, Tesla replaced the recall drive inverter with a drive inverter equipped with the properly functioning MOSFET component. So I'm just happy with the fact that they actually, number one, they were looking into it, which I never felt like they weren't, but that they were looking into it and then they're being proactive and they're going, let's go ahead and do a proper recall because that's something that we've been calling for weeks now is just recall it. Just recall it. Yeah. But obviously, like what Will said, they were trying to identify exactly how to narrow that number down because to just send out a massive recall, you're going to flood your service centers. Mm-hmm. And you're going to spend all kinds of money when
all the PR and everything
more than likely don't even need to. And then you're 100% right. The PR.
Yeah. And you're also potentially going to replace a whole lot of inverters that you weren't budgetarily planning on doing. It's like if you do it under a recall, I'm sure that there's some room to be like, okay, you know, if they carry some sort of insurance for a manufacturing interruption, then that might be something that it can cover. But you know, the simple fact is it's like, you know, how many Cybertrucks are on the road now? Like 30,000 at this point? Something huge?
I think there's probably close to 40,000 or so.
Yeah, so to try and just recall every single one of them for that inverter, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
That is a lot of work.
We seem to see it was consistent around that, you know, that same amount of miles too. It seemed to happen after a certain amount of time, which I guess remind me again, Eric, yours went out, but then what was the case the second time? Was it still the inverter as well?
It was the inverter again, but it's weird because the first time it happened to me, I was driving it popped, it did its little thing, it allowed me to continue driving, and I drove it to the service center. The second time, it just shut down all the power. And so that was one of the questions I asked my service tech, is I asked him, why did I have two different experiences?
Right.
But it's the same issue. He just said, he goes, when that inverter goes out, it can allow you to drive, or it can allow you, it, or it could just shut off all the power. And it just shuts everything off. And now you just can't go anywhere unless if you jump it. And obviously you jumped yours. Mm-hmm. And so you were able to get it to go. And so that's how you're able to get it back to us. But otherwise, that's kind of two different examples of what would happen when the inverter fails. It can continue going, or it can just shut you down. And I had both experiences.
I just don't understand how it happened the second time. You know what I mean? Like, if they fixed it. It just raises a lot of question of, like, if even they're fixing these recalls, if it's going to get fixed or not. And where did Will go?
Will disappeared. He's very upset about the recall. I remember reading something that kind of... okay, so it says right here, on effect...
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Here, let me share this again. So that way, hold on, Will. I was trying to get back in here. Right here it says, on affected vehicles, a fault in the drive inverter may cause it to stop producing torque. If the inverter stops producing torque, the driver loses the ability to apply torque to the vehicle using the accelerator pedal, resulting in loss of propulsion, which may increase the risk of collision. Yeah, so that's just telling you that you lose the torque. In my second inverter failure, it just shut down all the power, and it wouldn't allow me to even open the doors. So. Very, very, and I didn't understand how they were related, but the service tech said that, you know, that they are. So
I don't understand what that Chechen warlord is going to do when his fails.
Those Chechen warlords live their lives a quarter mile at a time. So I don't think that dude is thinking very far down the road. He's glad that thing plugged in last night. Exactly. You know,
one trench.
I live my life 2 rounds at a time.
And he's probably not going very far. He's staying in a small territory. But Jay's in chat, and he's stating that he's kind of scared because he's going to Vegas this weekend. He has 6,597 miles on his Cybertruck. So I know, Chase, you were going to kind of get into that as far as us identifying that mileage roundabout area when the failure happens. I think what we figured around the 11, 12, 13,000 mile range was when it was kind of happening.
I think 10 to 15 is probably the safe guesstimate from what we've heard so far.
Yeah. Yeah. That's from everybody that I've talked to. I haven't heard of anybody being under that 10,000 mile mark and having this issue. So what I would say, Jay, is don't, you know, I don't know everything, obviously, but I think you're okay.
But it's probably safe to say if you get over 15, you might be in the clear. Because like if you look at, we do have Cybertrucks that are well over that now, like Tesla Tino's up to almost 50,000 on his now. And I don't believe he ever had this issue, or at least didn't talk about it.
So one thing that I have noticed, and I hate to say this because, once again, I talk to a lot of people that are Tesla owners and lovers and all that, and content creators, and, and they make their business is Tesla, right? But a lot of them don't talk about it.
I was going to say, spill the tea.
There's a guy that I know, and I'm not going to say his name or his affiliation, but... he has a lot of miles on his Cybertruck, and I just learned that he had this issue, and at no point did he ever mention it. So it's just funny how people do that, right? It's it's almost like they don't want to talk bad because that's, you know, the hand that that feeds them, so to speak. But is it really? I mean, I think for me, the whole point of my channel, the whole point of the podcast is to share the raw experiences with people. Because I think we've said it many, many, many times on the podcast, Tesla isn't the most transparent. And that's fine. That's the way they do their business. They rely on a lot of content creators and outside people to do their publicity for them. And I don't want to be that guy that only feeds you the good stuff. I want to also feed you the bad stuff, because anything in life, if there's something good, there's always going to be something bad.
100%.
And, you know, you want more good than bad, and that's what would be the perfect scenario, but it's never going to be only perfect and no bad. And that's every product. So even all these cyber stuck and all these different media outlets that want to talk badly about Tesla and only focus on that, that's also wrong. So I don't want to be the guy that's only focusing on the good, and I don't want to be the guy that's only focusing on the bad. I just want to be raw and real and just sit there and say, this is what's happening with me, and take it for what it is.
100%. But we can all agree that that cooler should not be $700. Come on. Like,
well, okay.
There is a line.
So let's have that segue. Thank you, Chase. So one thing I think all of us, I think the three of us and every Cybertruck owner probably out there has wondered, and I've dreaded, it's always the joke when someone goes, my gosh, look at that windshield wiper. How much is that going to cost to replace? And I go, I don't want to talk about it. Like, why are you bringing that up? Like, I'm probably years from that. Well, Tesla finally has the wiper, the replacement wiper blade on their website. Ooh. And it's $75.
That's not bad.
$75. It's not bad.
That's fine.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I don't need to sell my Doge to do this. You know, I can actually do this. So that's something that I was kind of excited to see, is the fact that they, you know, they have the wiper blade now on there. I guess they're figuring it's now getting to the winter season and snow and rain. And, you know, people are going to probably or possibly need a
made it through a dry summer. So they're all cracked and ready to and get so they swapped have it now out in the winter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
As you can see, shout out to Stephen. I'm going to butcher his last name because I never said it out loud until literally right now. Knubel.
I like how you asked that as a question as somebody could answer. We're like, no.
Yeah, I
please tell me how to say that in the comments, please. Ooh. No. Yeah. Spell it phonetically. But no, I was supposed to meet him this last weekend, and he has some really great footage of the Cybertrucks in the snow. And I think they had an R1T up there as well too. But we were gonna take the Rivian up into the snow, have some fun.
Well, we're gonna get into your adventures right now. We could do that right after. I just want to point out a few things right here on this page that I'm sharing. One thing to note is it notes only one wiper blade needed for replacement.
Isn't that obvious?
I think that's pretty funny.
Somebody had really a lot of fun writing that joke. But
another thing that they added,
I feel like somebody was like, guys, look what I'm going to do. And someone was like, definitely leave that in.
100%.
Tesla is now partnering with Klarna.
Isn't that weird?
To offer financing. I feel
like that's weird.
Interesting.
For products in their shop.
You're going to finance your, finance a cooler. I get that. Cooler. Like, finance your wiper blade. Like, I mean, you know, no judgment, I guess. I should shut up, but I mean.
Well, the wiper. Well, the wiper blade, maybe not so much. Cause you know, like I said, I can confidently say like, I can afford $75. I got this. Thank God. but think about if somebody wanted to buy the quad.
Yeah.
Or somebody wanted to buy the Cyber 10.
Yeah.
You know, and they offer 0% interest.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's a nice, easy way to get people who want that, someone that owns the Cybertruck or, you know, and says, hey, I just threw down $80,000, $100,000 on this truck to buy $3,000 10. You know, I've already stretched myself kind of thin here, you know, but hey, you know what? I could get 0% interest, get the thing, and I could take my kids camping. All right, you know, I'm about it. You know,
it's exactly what I thought. I totally thought about layaway. I was like, oh, man.
You know,
shows our age.
Remember those days? I remember the days of going to, we would go to JCPenney.
Kmart had it. I remember when Kmart had layaway.
We would go and my parents.
Do they not do layaway anymore?
Kmart doesn't.
Is that not a thing anymore?
They don't exist anymore.
Yeah. And that was, we would go and we'd pick out school clothes or whatever there was. We'd go months in advance and we'd put it on layaway. And I don't know. My parents would figure that out.
Afterwards. My mom would just go to Marshall's and just come out with bags and bags. She was brilliant. She was brilliant about it. Marshall's was awesome. Oh. Shout out Marshall's. Sponsor us.
Yeah. Marshall's. I used to work at Marshall's. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I want to get into Chase's adventure.
Yeah.
So last week, I know Will, you weren't on, but Chase was, he called in remotely. He was, where were you at that time?
When I called in, I was in Lubbock, Texas. Cause we left Austin. We stayed in Lubbock for the night, which was just a little short start to the whole trip to Denver.
And you kind of got into a little,
So this isn't the most ideal place to be driving. You can see my face. I'm like utterly terrified. This is look at the road right now. What you see is one lane that was actually plowed from a snowplow that passed us the opposite way. And we were just slushing through at 35 miles an hour and just trying to get our way through. Cause this is I would say easily 6+ inches of straight up snow.
I don't mean
and
to be disrespectful, but you should freeze it when you pan back over, because Chase, you look like a younger man version of Mr. Invincible from the Invincibles. No, the Incredibles? No, whatever the hell. You look like Mr. Incredible. Yeah. You look like Mr. Incredible right there.
The Incredibles.
Yeah. Telling you. Look at this guy.
Look at those arms.
That's funny.
He's working out.
Yeah, this was a man. Oh, okay. How do we get here? So let me tell you. we were going along. We stopped to charge in Abilene. No, sorry, Amarillo. We stopped in Amarillo to charge, and then the next charge was from Amarillo to Clayton, New Mexico. And Clayton, New Mexico is just top corner of the Texas Panhandle, right into the top right corner, right before you get into Colorado. But it was a longer stretch. It was this is we're charging up to 85%, so it's we're gonna get in maybe low 10% kind of thing. And then the one strip of road that had 30 or 40 miles left to get to Clayton was closed, and they were routing us onto an off road, and we're just a county road. So we're this is weird. But I'm we have to get to Clayton. So I was looking at which ways to go. And then at that time it was only just spitting rain. And I kept seeing notifications on my phone about severe winter storm warning, all this other stuff. I'm okay, that's weird. It's just raining. It's fine. But the thing is the difference of elevation between, where we were was 3,000. And then Clayton is 5,000. So it got hairy really fast, and within an hour it was a blizzard, and we're to the point where I was low on charge, and the only option was to get to Clayton, because there was no way that we could turn back and find a charge, that was no snow, because we didn't have a charge enough to go backwards. So we literally just had to make it through to Clayton and go through the snow. So it was pretty sketchy. We finally rolled in with 20 miles left on the charge. So really, really tight. And it was crazy, because the amount of power that it was using wasn't quite lining up with the estimate. For instance,
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
We had about 40 miles to go, and we had roughly 75 to 80 miles left on our charge. But it was almost double the miles, because we were in snow mode and going through all of this snow the entire time. And when we rolled in, all the batteries were all of the engines were over 130 degrees, or they were rolling.
Oh,
high.
Wow.
Because we were in that snow slush for maybe a good hour, just trying to get through all that stuff. Because we were going as slow or as fast as we really could, which was 25, 30.
And what kind of tires do you have on the Rivian?
Just the regular street tires, though.
And how did that perform? Given, because you have the quad motor, right?
Yeah, and I think because we had the quad, it saved us quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It kind of counteracted that, which was kind of interesting, because at one point I realized, okay, we need to conserve energy. So I actually had it in conserve mode, where we've talked about it before. Since it's the quad, it'll only use the front two motors in conserve mode. But once the snow got more deeper as we were going into it, literally the Rivian was you need to switch to snow mode now. Cause we kept fishtailing and slipping. So I just kind of bit the bullet and all right, we'll put it in snow mode. And then that's what I was okay, the estimate's pretty low, but it's enough. We can at least get there. And yeah, but the snow mode, once we weren't like hoping that we weren't going to get stranded on the side of the road in a blizzard, snow mode was phenomenal. Like the quad motors in, you know, deep snow, it was handling it like a champ. Like it was actually a lot of fun in a lot of the parking lots where people were actually getting stuck in the motel parking lot, but we were just like rolling around like normal
because going through.
It's got the variable suspension, so in snow mode it actually takes it up all the way to the top, so you're at like
nice, you
know, 15 inches of clearance up to 45 miles an hour, and that's perfect.
Nice Yeah, so. That's the thing that I think is overlooked on, and it goes back to what I always tell people when they ask me, why did you get a Cybertruck? And I go, I love trucks. I need a truck, but I love the idea of the technology. And this is the perfect example. Rivian, the same thing, right? Where they have all these different modes. There's no guessing game. You don't need to sit there and go like, oh, like if you get in a traditional 4x4 vehicle, like what gear do I put it in, or what do I do? Forward here?
Do you turn on traction control, turn it off?
Exactly. Like, do I lock this, or do I? You know, you don't. You press a button. It knows what to do. It knows what type of terrain you're in, and it goes, this is the most optimal. Let's go. You know, and like you said, you have street tires, and you're in roughly you are somewhere where street tires are not
appropriate,
and you're just going through it.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
And I just watched yesterday a guy talking about like snow shoes. They're like things you can wrap around your tires. They're not like chains, but they actually work really well. But he showed the difference between using all terrain tires without it and then using those on like an incline. Thankfully, this was like fairly gradual. It wasn't like up any tight hills. But I think if we did have hills, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be a little bit more difficult. But I just love the fact that you were able to get out of what could be and I'm sure it was still a scary situation. And because of the performance of the vehicle and the quality of the vehicle, you're able 100%. To navigate it, you know, fairly easily. So
Plus,
that's it. That's good.
It, you know, it was just me and my wife, who's also pregnant. So it's like, we were like,
wanting
to keep everyone safe as much as possible. But
100%. The thing was that
it sucks because we missed the wedding because the wedding actually was supposed to happen on Friday. So we were supposed to get into Denver that day that we got stopped in Clayton. But then once we reached Clayton, essentially the highway to go backwards into Texas had closed as well. But then all the other highways exiting Clayton were all closed. So there was literally no way to get out of the town. And even like guys later on the next day, we're talking about like, oh, maybe I can like go this way and avoid the sheriff. And it's like, I can, my truck can make it. And it's like, okay. Because everyone was just stuck there. So like literally, we got a hotel right away and then ended up having to stay a second night. And then got to know all the people that were stranded in the hotel. And it was kind of nice because like we got to meet all these people. We made a hotel bar out of a bar. Hotel bar out of a hotel that doesn't have a bar.
There you go.
That ended up having, you know, having dinner with them and, you know, talking stories. So it was all good in the end, but we essentially, after 2 days, the sun came out, the blizzard stopped, and we had, you know, enough clearance that we could actually get out of the town and just kind of turn around and go home. But crazy.
Well, we have Mark in chat. He says, Chase was so close to the Big Texan Steakhouse in Amarillo, 72 ounce steaks.
I did pass by that. I was thinking about it coming back home. I'm like, oh, we could do that because it was around lunchtime too. But a steak for lunch and then having to drive like 9 more hours.
That would have been that's nap time after doing that.
Yeah, I will say though, I sent you a couple of pictures of like the charging that charging spot was in.
Oh, you sent me quite a few pictures.
Yeah. So it's crazy when we rolled up, like just when we got into town, we rolled up and there was a blue Cybertruck there at the charger. I never got to meet the owner. I'm like, but like, what's the chances? Like, this is in the parking lot where everyone was getting stuck, and I was just like having fun.
But if a Cybertruck gets snow on it, doesn't mean it got that's wet, and doesn't it burst into flames and rust and explode and die?
Right,
exactly.
But then the next day, when we didn't have anything to do, so we just went to the store just to go get the store. But I put it on charger. There was another Cybertruck there. Didn't get to meet them either, but still, it was crazy that we saw these two Cybertrucks and then never saw them again. I don't know where they went or how they got out.
They were the ghosts of Cybertruck past. Like
it kept dumping on us. And then what's interesting is it's kind of cool that I never really got to try the Rivian out in cold weather either, which is something new. Because like when in that picture, I cleaned off all the snow and we went to go charge. I noticed something weird because this whole trip, we were actually using Tesla superchargers because we just got the shout out to A2Z.
Hell yeah.
Got my adapter in just in time, quite literally, to use all the Tesla superchargers. So yeah, you can see the Cybertruck in the background and all the snow. But we pulled it up to this charger, and you can see my wife in there actually reading her on her phone. We pulled up to the charger, and I was hopping in there, and I was looking at the temperatures, and the motor temperatures kept going higher and higher and higher, and I'm like, this is weird. Oh, like, it was getting up to like 300 degrees, and I'm like, this is really weird. I'm like, do I just like stop it? And I actually did. I stopped it the first time, and then I restarted the charge. And then it started to do it again. And I'm like, okay. And I Googled and I'm like trying to figure out what was going on. Apparently in colder weather, Rivian uses their motors to help heat the battery.
Okay.
Interesting.
In this case. So that's a great tip for Rivian owners. If you're ever out in the cold and you're at a supercharger and you see those front two battery temperatures start to skyrocket into the red zone, like there's no like UI to tell you that, hey, this is okay. Just know it's fine because it's using those motors to heat up the battery so it can get up to fast charging. So, for instance, when we started it was only creeping along at like 78 miles per hour charging until the battery was able to warm up enough, and then it went back.
That's
to
interesting because I thought it was because maybe they shared a similar coolant system or like the same coolant lines, and maybe the heat from the battery was being taken through to the motors, and the motors were receiving that worried. Heat. But like, it makes sense though, if the motors heat up to heat the coolant lines or the heat up, whatever it's being used for. That makes a lot of sense. That's smart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if it's a good tip to keep an eye out for. But honestly, after this trip, like I'm sold on Rivian even more for their snow capability, because that was phenomenal.
Nice. That's great to hear.
Just the height variability, all that. Like, I want to take it off road now, because now that I can see what I can do in the snow, I'm itching.
He's gonna go jump it.
I won't jump it. I swear.
Take a little matter.
I really want to. Yeah. I really no. It's funny because my 2.5-year-old son, literally anytime we see a Cybertruck, he's like, Cybertruck jumps so high, he won't let me get it.
That's when I jump in nowhere.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to my good friend Dennis and his lovely wife Nancy. They're out to dinner with my parents, my wonderful parents. They invited me. I couldn't go tonight because I have a podcast, but they're out eating sushi and enjoying themselves. So hello to you guys. Hope you guys are enjoying your food. Dennis and Nancy are actually going on a 2,100-mile trip with their Cyber Beast this weekend, and so good luck to them, and hope they enjoy it and don't get any speeding tickets. So,
not in the Cyber Beast.
Yeah, I wanted to also, you were talking about going into the snow. I know I usually save it for the end of the show, but let's go ahead and just do it now because it's kind of relevant. But let's share what is going to be the wrap of the week. And that's so, this patina.
This is who I was talking about with Steven. So I was actually supposed to meet Steven up in Denver when we were going to come back down, because we were like, oh, there's going to be a snowstorm coming in, we should like go up to some mountains, it'd be great. Unfortunately, I didn't get to meet them, but now I just have another reason to go back up there.
That's really cool.
Yeah, but I love what he did with this is it's not a wrap. He's actually patinaed
it's acid.
You can kind of see the white marks, like the directions of them,
and
up, down, wherever.
Yeah,
it looks more like it came off of a Mars mission than the actual truck it did.
Yeah, I love the fact
it's cool.
So you've talked to him. What was the thinking behind doing this? What, he just wanted to be original, or
I should ask him honestly.
Because it's awesome.
I don't think this is his. I think this is the guy who went with him, because he's got the blue Cybertruck.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm curious to hear it. And those are some knobby tires. What are those?
Yes. I was admiring the tires there. Here they are. I see the blue one back there.
Yep.
And this is his buddies. And, once again, there's three Cybertrucks here. They're in the snow, and everybody says it, right? The Cybertrucks can't go in the snow. So I don't know how.
Yeah.
They must have had a Ford there.
See, notice this is a photograph, not a video. Aha!
And this has been doctored. Mm-hmm. And they weren't really in a soundstage in Burbank. Actually in Southern California
with Kubrick and the moon landing.
Yes.
Calm down.
Exactly. Exactly. So, no, that's
beautiful.
Cool Cybertruck.
I need to go somewhere with some snow this winter. It really is. It's been too long.
You know what's funny is last few days, my son and I have two boys, but my youngest, he's more adventurous, and he was telling me, Dad, we need to go because I'm going camping next weekend, but we're going out to the desert. And he goes, yeah. I want to go up to the mountains. I want to go to the snow. So that's my next, after this next weekend's camping trip, I want to plan something to go up in the snow with the Cybertruck, especially I have those big Falcons, you know, the Wild Peaks AT4s, mm-hmm. they're snow rated. I want to put it to the test. I need to do a video on it anyways. And so I'm looking forward to doing something like that. So hopefully soon. I just, you know, the problem right now, Will, as you know, is Big Bear is still,
yep.
I think a lot of it is still closed because of the wildfire. So,
oh, that's right.
So otherwise I would have been up there already, not necessarily right the snow, on. But I would have been up there already, but I, you know, so got to wait. Oh. I think at the end of this month, they're opening things back up. Hopefully. I wanted to talk about, if anybody's ever wondering what happens to Cybertrucks when they're no longer needed.
Cyberstuck.
So here is a scrapyard where I guess prototype Cybertrucks
go to die. They barely lived a year. Those RCs from last year, they were so adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Here they are right here. That picture got smaller.
They should auction them off for parts, just not for replacement parts, but just for the cool factor. Because, like,
you know what? The cool factor, talk about just auctioning one of those off and someone, one of those panels? Just somebody just getting one of these RC, even just like that, with no tires, no wheels, no nothing, and just putting it like, you know, these YouTubers, you know, these guys that have crazy, you know, they put it somewhere, you know, as a decorative piece. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. I saw someone that painted the cyber, like the graffiti Cybertruck logo, kind of like the what you see on the side of that, like up on a black wall in like white paint. I want to do that on the wall. I've been dying for some art.
That should be really cool. But yeah, you know, these are famous for the off-roading videos that Tesla has put out, showcasing the Cybertruck off-roading in Mexico and Baja. And so these are all going off to see their demise.
Zoom in.
Which one?
Zoom in on the one you were just talking about, the off-road one.
Oh, right here.
Look at their rear fairing, or lack thereof.
Yeah, it's gone.
Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. And as a matter of fact, you know, what's funny is one of our viewers, they actually sent me a message asking for me to do a video on how to remove them properly because they've had some trouble doing it. And I haven't done that video yet because I don't have mine on. And since I have running boards and all that, so it's kind of a pain. But what I want to do is get with somebody that has a stock Cybertruck and see if they'll let me film just me removing one and then just putting it back on for them, you know, but just showing the video. And one of my neighbors actually just got a Cybertruck. It's always parked outside his house. So I should go knock on his door.
I won't shout it out because I don't remember who it was, but there was someone on X that had made it a video of how to undo it. That's how I figured out how to do it myself.
Okay.
But it's definitely useful because that's, you know, those really quick, handy tip videos are great.
No, those are really good. Another thing that I think is really big in Cybertruck news is the fact that you can now lease a Cybertruck.
Yes.
And it's starts at $999 a month for a 36-month lease with $7,500 down. Obviously, $999 is still a lot of money, but in today's environment and climate, it's like every vehicle is so expensive that it's kind of hard to even get something. I mean, I remember the days of you getting a car and having a $200 payment.
So, quick question though. Is the $7,500 down?
Yes.
Is that the subsidy at the point of sale? Is that $7,500, or do you need to give them an additional $7,500? Because that right there is a way to get you into a Cybertruck, taking advantage of the $7,500, subsidizing it. And I know for a fact that leases can take access of the full $7,500 because that's what I'm doing with Rivian. So I'm curious if that $7,500 down to start the lease is out of pocket, or if it's just you doing the point of sale credit rebate, or if you've, or if they're effectively getting $15,000.
That is a good question, and I don't have the answer.
I'm curious,
to
maybe
that
somebody,
question.
Maybe somebody who, if anybody's watching the show or listening, and they've initiated a lease with for the Cybertruck, I'm curious to know how that shook out, because I know that that $7,500 is there for leased vehicles that otherwise would not qualify, depending on what their MSRP is. But I think under a lease, they literally just are like, yeah, you get it. So
if I had to just guess, and I'm only making an assumption here, and I hate to make assumptions, but if I had to guess, this is probably out of pocket. So you're probably correct. They're probably getting the $7,500 from you and then the $7,500 from the government.
That is a safe assumption.
That's just my assumption.
Why I assume they're going to take less money? They would 100% want as much money as they could qualify for. But just seeing that price point, oh my God, $1,000 for your standard and only $150 more a month for the Cyber Beast. You know, that's attractive. I'm going to say maybe I've just been leasing cars too much in my life, but that is cool.
Yeah, I don't know. You guys both financed your Cybertruck, correct?
Correct. God, I wish I didn't. Okay. That
we don't need to get into all the numbers.
Give me Cybertruck.
I mean, we can. But like my payment was still under $1,500. It was like $1,470.
Yeah, my payment is $1,482.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So, $999 is a lot better than $1,492, and I had to give a lot more money than the $7,500.
Since you've had that long and you've been making your payments, I mean, you're further ahead than what the lease buyout is. I mean, that's another question for it, because I know Tesla's other leases, some of them, they don't allow you to buy it out at the end. You have to return it. So I'm curious if the Cybertruck's the same deal. Yeah. You get to the end and you're like, I love it so much, I'll buy it. And they're like, well, then get in line, because this one's going back to the factory.
Mm.
Oh, here we go. This is
interesting. I was going to say, do you think? Okay. I mean, I've never heard of someone doing that. A company doing that.
Usually they want to, but Tesla wants the Model 3s back. Right? I think, especially whichever ones they're leasing. I think the 3s and Ys were up for leases. But you know, Chase, you found something. Speak to it.
Here you go.
Yeah.
When you go through the financing options, because $7,500 down, ooh, I think is an optional down payment. That's how you get it down to $999. But if you put zero down on the lease, you're at $1,250.
So they're definitely taking the $7,500, and if you match it,
consider
that'll bring down the price to $1,000 a month.
Yeah, that's only with 10,000 miles a year, 36 turns. Which I mean, because you think about it this way, like if you wanted to, this is not a thing anymore, I don't think. But if you wanted to like buy or lease three and put them up on Turo.
I think you would definitely run
money.
I think that Turo doesn't allow leased vehicles. I think that you would share their registration and they'd see it was leased and they'd be like, no. Because then there's a whole liability of the mileage.
Yeah, they would catch you. Or if you go off Turo and then you just rolled the dice. Because that's what I was thinking. Like I was gonna make the joke of like, oh, it's 990, it's basically $1,000 a month. Mm. You just rent it out for $1,000 a day and then you get but wham bam.
Yeah. That'd be the dream scenario, right? Everyone would be doing that.
Which
at that
I mean,
point.
Look, rent a Cybertruck in Miami, what's that at now? That's the question. I need to find the answer to it though. Now I'm curious.
While you're doing that, Hugo's in chat. He got here a little late, but what's up, Hugo? Also, Jay is saying that his payment is $1,400. So, yeah, I think that's kind of normal.
It's about
around that range.
Mine was higher, but that's because I make bad financial decisions.
Okay. But nonetheless, we were all painted.
I was paying enough that $1,000 a month for the same truck to own it and drive it for 3 years. That's where my head's kind of like, I would.
Yeah.
You make that deal.
You know what's the real kick in the freaking, you know what? Is the payment is high, right? I mean, but you know, it's a $100,000 car. So the payment's high. But then the insurance, especially in the early days, the insurance was a my gosh, man.
Not that I am one to
460.
But I am one to defend the insurance industry in the slightest. But I will say this, these are really, really weird times for as much as long as they spent trying to be competitive over rates and just kind of go off of actuarial tables that were based on statistics that were kind of hindsighted. But things change so quickly now, and I don't think that they know how to insure a goddamn thing. And they're like, God forbid a disaster happens, because then they're like, now we have to find out what they were all actually worth and how much money do we have? Oh, God, that's not nearly enough. You know, it's just, it just kicks off this whole thing. So, you know, play the sad violin and the trombone for the insurance industry. But it does kind of affect us because we rely on them to kind of make us whole when some other clown decides to plow into our vehicle. Yeah, I think it's only going to get worse with some of the, you know, some of the cars and the defaults and the short-term debt world as far as cars are concerned. I mean, I don't know what they know. And then the thing that I sent you before, it's like you got that on one hand, then the other end of the spectrum. You can buy a Model 3 on Hertz for $19,000 right now. Like right now. And like, cause they're selling off, I mean, their fleet, they're old. They've got a lot of miles. Well, not even old. I think the one that I sent you guys was from 2022 and has like 127,000 miles on it, like 120,000 miles, but it's still got this enormous battery in it. So I feel like there's kind of a cut, you know, when Powerwall's like, you know, 14 kilowatt hours for $8,000 plus hardware, you know, at a certain point you're like, just buy a Model 3, park it in the back, and run a really long cord. Once PowerShare comes online, there's your house backup battery. I just have a Model 3 on the back on concrete blocks. You know, but yeah, it's like that's.
I see it. Hey, you get one of those RC Cybertrucks and throw.
That's like you know, that's like the price difference that we're seeing in some of the vehicles that hold the emblem of Tesla. So I don't think that these insurance companies have any idea how to price anything. They're like, please God, just don't have an accident. Don't make us pay.
Yeah.
I did find a VIP Miami Auto Rentals has went up for $1,000 a day. That's the highest I've seen so far.
Wow.
Another company has went up for $500, and then I'm still seeing up in the $400s and on Turo. In Miami.
That's pretty good. That's not bad, right? I mean, where did you guys get down to? What was your lowest rate towards the end there?
$350. Because that was my bottom dollar. Like, I wasn't going to go below that. But everyone else started to go below that, and we saw as low as $140.
I think that my most affordable rentals were at $475 still, but that was super early on. And I don't know. Obviously, you know, Chase knows what the Texas market was like, and my nearby area, I want to say that there were only like four or five Cybertrucks, but as soon as we hit double digits, I want to say that like the interest in rentals just kind of disappeared at my price point, and I saw the prices that other people were starting to get to, and I'm like, that's starting to eat in. Like, this is bad business at this point if it's going to go that far. And that was around the time that I was like, and that was around the time where I was like, if it's not worth it, then the business decision is to say I need to pass it on to the next owner. So
exactly. Yeah, we didn't hit that point maybe until like three-ish months after you did, because at least the market here was holding high for a while. And then, it just tipped really fast. And I think it was around that 15,000 Cybertrucks, 20,000 Cybertrucks kind of time frame. That's when a lot of people started getting them.
Yeah. Well, Miami, if they're able to get $1,000 a day, I mean,
I'm on the Cybertruck page right now, and I'm seeing lease all wheel drive $907 is what it's showing for me. With the included thing. Okay, cool. Unchapped that. Okay. And I'm sorry. I mean, that's.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. But the question, of course, is going to be in like.
We need to get you guys back into Cybertrucks.
If I could afford to have any kind of fun right now, I would, man. But now ain't the time.
Well, I mean, that's something to say though about like how you can get into a Cybertruck now for $80,000 pretty easily, not paying the $20,000 add-on. That's the biggest pain that I think a lot of people that are offloading it or going to get into trouble is because of that markup.
I'm going to be very curious to see when we start seeing used Cybertrucks
at deprecated price point, like an actual
You know,
we'll say underwater below the MSRP. You know, if you were going to order one now, what the used market looks like for that.
I mean, I was looking the other day. Actually, I think 88 is the lowest I've seen.
Right? Don't you think?
Nah, I think it's going to be sooner than that.
You think so?
Personally.
Because at what point is it considered now that, like, oh, yeah, this isn't, like, you know, like in the, like, normal, traditional ICE cars, it's like, oh, yeah. Well, that one has 150,000 miles, so, you know, it's cheaper. Like, with it electric vehicles,
the mileage I don't know if that matters is rated in so many decimal places that, for the most part, I think that the usual byline for Tesla is, like, we don't know how many miles the motor can last. We've never had one go that far. You know, they've never encountered a 5 million mile vehicle. The company was making vehicles en masse in 2014 moving forward. So they haven't been on the road long enough to know if they can go that far.
Yeah.
But, and a lot of those cars statistically get taken off the road for reasons, not because of a failure of the drive motor or whatever. But that's the point of it, is the whole, they've built these motors and they're like, we know that there is literally, there's no indication of the deterioration that would require changing this for another motor. We don't know where that would come from, how, what that would look like. The way we build them, it just isn't necessarily a part of the equation like they are with ICE vehicles, because there's so many parts that are accessible and interconnected by belts and hoses and stuff. Like the drive unit is just a behemoth that's enclosed. There's a reason why you don't have oil changes. There's a reason, you know, for all that, because it's just brilliantly, you know, perfect for that.
Well, I think the kicker that we've been talking about a lot is like the price of full self-driving. It's still, if you wanted to buy one brand new, it's still $8,000. So you're talking about 74 plus 8, you're up to 82. This is where I'm concerned, because like at least in the media area in Texas, the lowest used dual motor I'm seeing is actually at 92,000. I don't think the market has caught up enough.
People are still impounding the price of the Foundation Series into that to try to prop it up. It won't. I don't think that it'll be until the vehicles that were sold non-Foundation Series get a few miles on them and then wind up on a used car lot, so much so that they can't even say, "Oh, there's no Foundation Series etching." You know, not that it makes a huge difference, other than just that. I think that once those end up on the used car lot, you've got a guy who's like, either I sit here and watch this Cybertruck sit here all day at 92,000, or I move it to the price point where it'll move with the other vehicles, with the rest, with the rest of the market. Just there isn't a market yet. BRB.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you bought a used Foundation Series, you're not going to get the power share with it. Or even, is that even possible?
Well, no. I mean,
you would still have to pay the hardware out of pocket $2,500.
You would have,
unless someone had
the credit. You still
have
the capability, because the vehicle has the capability. You would have to then just pay an electrician, Tesla, you know, whoever, to come out and install all of that hardware. And you'd pay for all that out of pocket. And yeah, you wouldn't get any type of credit or anything for that.
Because then it's really just the FSD that you're getting baked into it that really is giving it that price. Like, I'm not seeing FSD in the tires, because I really didn't think the branding and the insignia is worth obviously that much.
Yeah, I think the branding, the Foundation Series, I've thought, I mean, obviously when we bought ours, I wasn't expecting them to get into the 20,000-30,000 range of Foundation Series, wherever they ended up that
at. It's going to be much more exclusive.
Yeah, so that hurt that, I think, some, but I think for me, at least, the Foundation Series was always something that I feel like 20 years from now, you know, 30 years from now, we're just talking about matching and Foundation Series and the value there for that. That's something down the road, you know.
It's one of those collectible items that becomes a collectible if it becomes a collectible. It's like people bought, you know, a Beanie Babies thinking they were going to be collectible. They were wrong. Other people bought Pokemon cards or Magic the Gathering. Turned out to be wildly collectible. So I feel like there's, you know, the future decides that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's why I hold on to my first generation Pokemon cards.
Here we go. Sorry. I extended my search to nationwide. Lowest I'm seeing nationwide is 86. Mm-hmm. That makes more sense. With 7,000 miles on it for a dual motor.
And you can buy a brand new one for 80.
Yep. Or 82. It's crazy. With FSC. I mean, you could get one lower than that if you didn't want FSD. You could buy one for 74.
That's true. That's true. Getting off of that, a quick question for you, Chase. Mm-hmm. Who's your energy company, if you don't mind me asking?
PEC.
Okay, so you don't have Reliant. Okay, so in Texas,
Pedernales Electric.
Reliant is offering Chevy EV owners free overnight home charging. So if you are in Texas and you have Reliant as your energy electric utility company, what they're going to be doing is offering credits for electricity used between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. And this is something to that I believe is exclusive to the Chevrolet brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is one way, I mean, a great way, I think, to get people to choose Chevy over every other EV brand.
100%. But my question is, how would they know? Are they just, if you have a qualifying EV, then you let them know, and then they just kind of discount you from those hours, I guess?
Yeah. So it says this collaboration aims to make EV adoption more appealing by making charging cheaper and greener. But existing Reliant customers can also sign up for free charge night plan. To get started, Chevrolet EV owners need to designate their vehicle on the GM Energy Smart Charging portal before enrolling in the plan. So they're working together, Chevrolet and Reliant, to come up with a way to identify those that have a Chevy EV. But I think that's great, you know, a way to get people to get into EVs, and specifically Chevy, and offering them some free charging at home. It's not like you need to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's like the most ideal situation, right? Hey, you know,
totally.
Tesla offers supercharging, free supercharging sometimes. Like, I have free supercharging right now for a year, but I still have to, and it's not that big of a deal. First world problems, right? But I have to drive to a supercharger and charge. And sometimes I'm tired. I don't want to go do that, but I do it. Like last night, for instance, I didn't want to stop. I was driving home. I didn't want to stop and charge a supercharger. So I just plugged it in at home and kind of just took the L, right? I'm just going to charge overnight at home. I'll pay this time. But this is great.
Yeah, I like that. Like, it reminds me, because we actually used to live in Dallas a few years back, and Dallas is interesting because obviously Texas, we have our own power grid. So the power companies here in Texas kind of get kind of crazy once in a while. And Reliant is actually one of the power companies there. And it's in a sense, in Dallas, you can actually choose your power company. It, like, it's just the open market. It's like, you don't, like, obviously down here in Austin is a little bit different. So we only have the one that we can choose from, but yeah, you have the open market, and you would not believe the incentives. Like, one was just giving, like, they give away like a free, like, Nest thermostat, one giveaway, a free shotgun.
Alrighty. Like,
that's a Texas thing.
It's completely Texas.
What kind of shotgun?
Like, sign up for this for the next 6 months. Like, but the thing was, is that it became lucrative, because what you could do, you could literally jump between electric companies, whichever had the better deal every 6 months. Keep switching, because you were the same grid, same network.
That's hilarious. They're giving away shotguns. Hey, I mean, I could use a new shotgun, but
get a Chevy EV truck. Get the free shotgun.
It's a country song being written before my eyes.
Do a YouTube video about it.
Got my EV shotgun. Love the troops in America.
Exactly.
That's funny. So some news about your beloved Rivian. Let me pull this up real quick. So Rivian and Volkswagen officially launched their new EV business partnership. They are an upcoming EV startup. One of the world's largest automakers are teaming up to accelerate the shift to electric vehicles. You know, what was it, back in June?
Mm-hmm.
VW and Rivian did their deal for $5 billion to kind of join forces. And now they're starting the Rivian and VW Group Technology LLC. And they're going to be partnering and coming up with, I think it says right here, everything, every type of vehicle, right? They're not going to just do SUVs and trucks. They're doing sedans and passenger vehicles. It's official that they're in bed together. You know, they started that back in June, and now they have their LLC, and
But R3 looks so cool. They're
making their vehicles.
Here, scroll. If you scroll back up to the top, I think there was something pretty telling because I had to look it up too. Where? Nope. Back one screen down. Yeah. Oh, dead center. Actually, a little bit up. I sound like such an asshole right now. This is probably not even the right. Okay, the literally dead center of the screen. So I thought it was interesting. Legacy automaker will use Rivian software expertise to create a new EV architecture for next gen software defined vehicles. When I think I've mentioned on here before, my thoughts on this is what the legacy automakers mistook when they started trying to take electric vehicles seriously. They thought that they would just build a vehicle, slap a battery in the bottom, and change the motors and charge more.
Yes.
So now we are seeing that they're like, here is VW literally buying into the EV market, to the, you know, second up and comer behind or the first up and comer behind Tesla, being like, we don't know how to make vehicles the way customers are expecting vehicles to operate. Like what Chase was talking about with, hey, this car literally has a snow mode that I push a button, it goes bam, I know how to handle snow mode no matter what you throw at me. I need all terrain. It's software defined vehicles. It's vehicles that are using software to define the environment and the ride for the passenger. That's what people are coming to expect. It's the new air conditioner. I shouldn't just get in a car that feels like a lawnmower that happens to have an air conditioner. I want something that has a nuance to it that's still safe. And I think this is VW 100%. $5.8 billion to catch up to probably where Tesla was 3 years ago or a little bit further. I mean, wow. Well done, guys. I mean, you guys upped my TDI because I had a VW 2012 TDI. That was amazing. And then they Dieselgate, so I had to get rid of it. And this is probably part of their being like, here, we're going to fix it. We're going to literally invest with Rivian. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, I think this is great news. Obviously, both of you guys have Rivians. I'm a huge Rivian fan, and I love this type of partnership. You know, them coming, joining forces, you know, acknowledging maybe their shortcomings, you know, and saying, hey, I can help you here, you can help me there, and let's just make something great for the consumer.
End of the day, I mean,
I'm all about that.
And there's not an automobile conglomerate larger than VW. Volkswagen Group is literally the premier worldwide vehicle manufacturer, and they literally just signed up. They just paired off with Rivian. So, I mean, you know, you got to remember like the things that are in other parts where it's like, you know, Tesla's been competing in China for a long time where it's way fiercer. So they've got their advantage there, you know, and we're seeing hopefully seeing even more new manufacturers kind of joining the table here where it's like, yeah, software expertise, technological expertise being introduced into vehicles is what we want as shown by what they're making in China. I mean, the BYD vehicles over there and stuff. If you see some of the interior experience of those cars, you're like, holy crap. Yeah. I'm like, I feel like I'm sitting on like a cigarette stained 60s like corduroy couch compared to what you see in some of those vehicles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is where the next evolution of competition
100%.
Is. 100%. Make an experience for the 21st century.
Well, we talked about it last week, and unfortunately, Will wasn't.
I was so drunk
on the podcast last week. But we were talking about
Scout Motors. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm sure you've seen that, Will. And I'm so hyped about Scout coming back. And I just love the look of these vehicles. Mm-hmm. I mean, even look at that SUV. Yeah. Even the height of it. To me, it kind of gives me the look of the Rivian R1S. Yeah,
the Ford fucking Bronco. Sitting here staring at the screen, looking at the animation of it just driving on the Go First, Go Further page on their page. You scroll down a little bit, you'll see it. All I can see is like, oh my God, I hope somebody makes a T-top – a hardtop convertible conversion as soon as possible. I want to see this as the beach cruiser Bronco that I have always wanted all my life. Yeah, that's even cool too. No, I don't know. The page is weird. That looks amazing. But, you know, that's exactly what they're copying and they're using for it. But, oh my gosh, I want to see a hardtop. That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I don't need another car, but I know these aren't
exactly
going to be coming out.
Plan
for
the
quite
future
some time.
A little bit, you know.
I may want to throw down. I may cancel my R2 reservation, and you know,
yeah. What are they asking? Reserve now.
Sure,
let's see here. Travis,
I mean,
they got a truck. They got a thing. Yeah. Electric plus gas.
I don't know what they're asking.
No.
Yeah, they're talking about they're going to have a gas generator.
Gas powered range extender.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
That's fascinating.
To see. Yeah.
$100.
So the
I'm
fee
doing
is
$100. Not right now,
$100
but
fee.
Like later.
Yeah.
Starting as low as $50,000, retail prices starting under $60,000. Production targeting for 2027.
Pricing isn't bad. I mean, obviously, they're saying 2027, so we have quite a bit of time until then, so pricing may and will change.
I want to be a sci-fi nerd for a second. So prices. I'm like, okay. So it's not that I'm trying to move the goalposts on the whole, you know, anti-gasoline thing, but there's a part of me that wants to be like, okay, the electric plus gas version that you can get, where the gas powered. I want it to just be like, you know, like mention and be like, oh, it's actually a solid fuel source, a liquid fuel source actually. Just don't mention gasoline. Just be like, oh, it's my liquid fuel that backs up the power generator.
I wonder how that's gonna if that avoids the California, California's passing the electric vehicle laws.
I think it'll depend on the exhaust.
30, whatever.
I think it'll depend on how it uses that gas to power the batteries, and they've got time to figure out, or maybe they already have it figured out. Maybe that's the ace up their sleeve. They have some sort of a closed exhaust system that uses some combination, like, you know, urea DEP for capturing from diesel systems, something specifically for this that they can use. It's like, it draws so little power from the generator to charge the batteries that we can actually capture the exhaust without overheating it or something.
That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. It's got to be very little exhaust because it's not like it's the entire gas engine.
The moment
just,
it has any kind
motor
of exhaust,
to
I believe that it jumps out of its class of vehicle. So so I would think that they would have to. That was exactly my first thought. I was like, the electric plus gas sounds interesting, but I want to know how they handle exhaust from it. And if it's just, if it's just pooping it out, then just please tell me it's like, just something mildly tiny. Mm-hmm. Although it'll screw it up if it's anything.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, the truck is way better than the R1T when I'm looking at it right now. Like even the back window comes down. Come on.
Yeah. No, the truck is. Remember last week I mentioned that I felt like, from what I've seen online, what they did with that truck was like everything that I would want in the truck. It's like they did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they almost made the perfect truck. My biggest thing is what's the size? It doesn't look. Yeah. It looks bigger than the R1T. I don't know 100%, but it looks slightly bigger.
Slightly,
much
is
bigger,
it?
But it looks slightly bigger. So
an ACS. Yeah.
Well, I mean, everybody's adopting it. I mean,
they're doubling down,
especially for a neophyte company such as themselves. I'm sure that they're like, we can't around. We need to jump on that. Is it longer than the R1T?
No, you gotta go to NAC. I think from the video that I saw from my buddies over at TFL.
Okay, so I'm on the scout page and I'm like flicking back and forth. I've got Traveler SUV and Terra truck. So when you go to the Terra truck and then you go back to the Traveler SUV, you just bounce back and forth. Stick with me. You can definitely see that they're a different length and wheelbase. So they're not the same. They're not the same platform. That they're just changing.
Yeah.
The cabin or shape on top of it. Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, because you can obviously see that was, I think, that was Rivian's, the way that they made the R1T into the R1S is literally just change the cab, change the vehicle structure. But you can definitely see the Terra is longer. So if the Terra is longer, then they must be two different wheelbases.
It looks more like a full-size length, at least. I'm not sure about the width.
I mean,
if that's a full-size truck, I'm in.
It looks pretty briefer.
I don't think it's going to be full-size based off of the video I saw, but it does look, and I'll pull up the video.
Well, they have the dimensions.
Yeah. Getting all technical.
Yeah, there you go.
Typical programmer.
That's the better thing to do, huh? Yeah.
He's like, let me just look up the manual,
the
guys. Hang on.
Give the data. Let's see. Length. Okay. I just compared it to an F1. Okay. Thank God it's in inches. All right. Length of a supercab with a 6.5-foot bed is 231 inches on an F-150. The length of this Terra truck is 229 inches, 0.2. It's got a 71.7-inch bed, so roughly
6 foot, almost 6 foot, 1 inch shorter,
6 foot bed. Almost 6 foot bed.
I mean, if you look at this video right here, So this gentleman right here is about 6 feet tall.
Oh my God. And this is a full size truck. This is a full size truck.
How high that the top of the bed is to his, you know, it's almost at his shoulders. And then the top of the truck is above his head.
I'm sold.
Chase is like, get this Rivian out of the goddamn driveway. I'll take it.
No. Like, the R1T is cool, but it's still a mid-sized truck. Like, that's the problem. But this is legitimately a full-size truck. No,
I'm intrigued. I'm about it.
I totally missed this last week, but this is great.
You know,
I'm really excited about it. I'm actually disappointed it's going to take 3 years to get them out.
Just looking at the shape of this, like the first thing for some reason I just thought of was Elon on stage. What was it, like in October with the whole thing being like the future should look like the future. And I'm like, yeah, this thing looks like the future. This thing looks futurist, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's the same width. It's the same width as the F-150 as well.
It's wild.
They're both 80 inches wide.
I wonder if
Look at this. Look at the frunk.
What if they came up with a way to have some sort of a variable length platform that they can play with? Yeah, because between the two vehicles, there's varying lengths. And from what I can see from the profile of the truck, it looks like the rear wheel is more a feature of the bed versus some other chassis. So I wonder if that's kind of like a trick that they're pulling with it. I don't know. It's cool.
Yeah. Wait, why did they put?
And you see the bench seat?
I feel like every mock-up goes for bench seats, and then they never deliver them. I want a goddamn bench seat. That thing's amazing. Bench seats are the shit. Everybody remembers if they've ridden in like a Ford F-150 from like before 1970s or 60s or some shit. That bench,
mm-hmm,
with its crappy leather cracked in the sun.
So,
a lot of Virginia's lost with a bench seat. But why is there a power?
It's got to be. There's a mock-up.
Is there?
Come on, this has got to be. Like, I feel like, wasn't there? Yeah, what's that circular right plug? It's, you know, for plugging in your toaster. Right, I don't, you know.
Yeah, like that little button that's sticking out.
There's way too many buttons.
That could be for the radio.
There's way too many buttons. There's buttons on the left. There's switches. There's buttons. Right, this is the mock-up of mock-ups. I take back what I said about the future. You get inside, you're like, this is the 80s. More switches.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got the panel
right and airy that is
something though. That I kind of wish I had in my in my Gen 1 R1S, because the Gen 2s have that photo chromatic glass that you can change the darkness of, so you can have completely clear or dark.
Here's the frunk.
That is amazing.
So I'm noticing a commonality here with this like made up Mole kind of panel that's on the back of this. They had the same thing on the back of the seats.
Yeah,
so like you see that in the back of the frunk. Essentially, you could tie things to that, but it's not Mole, but it's their own kind
extra
of
extra
like
utility. Lots of tie down points. Yeah. That's, I mean, I appreciate it. You know, it.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, you go grocery shopping or something like that. You don't want to put stuff in the trunk because it'll flop around. Unless you put a little carabiner on the handle and you just latch it to that. Boom, it's all going to stay upright.
Mm-hmm.
We're domesticists on this podcast. What's up?
Hugo's saying that's
what the first one looked like when they showed it to everybody. Cybertruck. It was a bench seat. Everyone should remember that.
Mm-hmm.
They took a bench seat from you. They took it from you.
100%. I was actually really excited with the fact that it was going to have a bench seat
at the reveal.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted the bench seat.
They gave people test drives in a bench seat.
Remember what they took from you, people.
What are you going to do?
You could have had it.
And now we revolt.
They're going to do the whole like materials, just like Rivian does, where it's like you can customize everything. But I'm also seeing like some extra things just on the site, like including what looks like a gas tank or at least a water tank. But yeah, this has me excited, especially with the ideas. Like,
chat. What's up, LJ?
Having a gas tank.
So, speaking on like weird interior experiences, what's like the weirdest you can come up with that you want? Like that's just makes, well, not just necessarily the weirdest, but functional weird, like the furthest, you know, something that no one will make for the interior of your truck or your vehicle. What's a creature comfort for in there that you want? Like, what do you, you know, if that's your thing, be like, you know what, to have a little thing to tap in some espresso and fill it up at the beginning of the month, just, you know, water out.
Yeah. I take this back. Like a legitimate, like a thought out designed way to like change a baby diaper, like a, not like just put down the tailgate and just put them on the down, like actually thinking about like more form and function with family stuff. I think
Chase is a full dad.
I've been there, man. And be like, these goddamn baby things suck.
I got one going out of diapers and a new one coming in. So it's
that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I just try to imagine like one of the main things I always think, like, I want somebody to make the cabin of the vehicle just be like actually like lay flat. Like comfortably, like, you know, this, none of this, hey, look, your seat, it is flat now. Like, I want something that like almost turns into a waterbed inside the vehicle. Like, I want to be that just chilled out.
I was going to say, and it's something that other vehicles have, so it's nothing crazy, but I haven't seen it in an EV yet. And maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe there it's somewhere and I just don't know. But two things. Number one, I would like to have massaging
the
seats
on
a truck EV. But I would like to have access to the front from the cab.
And was it Bollinger Motors was going to give that to you? But then.
Yeah. The pass through. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, R1T has something like that from the cab. You can that little like cargo space that they have where it's like it goes all the way through. You can actually access that from inside of the back seat. Like it has the little like the, you know, armrest folds down. Yeah, I would take that, especially with a little mini fridge. It should be easy.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. But that's it, guys. That's all I got for this week. Not sure if you guys had anything else you guys want to talk about.
Not currently.
All right, we covered everything, including Doge.
I feel like there's other stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I think we're good.
No. The world is evolving. It's because I wasn't here last week, so I feel like I've missed stuff. I'm like, wait, are we talking about the time that... No, yeah, we talked about that. That's cool. Yeah, cool. All right. Let more shit happen. We'll talk about it next week.
Yep.
Cool. Yep.
All right, guys. Appreciate everybody in chat. As always, Mark, Hugo, LJ, Jay, Dennis, my good friend Dennis. I hope you guys had a good dinner.
Hang on, Mark, with Anthony, the solid idea from YouTube. The idea of an isolated frunk is that you could put stinky loads up there. And as a gym rat whose gym bag always goes into my frunk, I appreciate that it is ventilated and is not ventilated into the cabin. So
Mark is 100% correct. I've always used it for leftovers when I leave a restaurant. I throw my food. Like
if I forget it, who cares?
And then drive home.
It won't stink up the car.
Okay, smell the worst.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate everybody in chat. We'll see you guys next week.
Yep. Thanks, y'all.